Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Joining us right now in the Texas Rangers hot seat, it is brought to you by Twin Peaks and Jellyfish Lighting. It is Texas Rangers manager Chris Woodward. Woody, what you going absolutely. By right now? Yeah. All right, Woody, how's it going today, man?
Doing really good. Good. Yeah, you guys know me.
Yeah.
People that don't know me call me Chris. So.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure.
We're in the Woody stage.
There now. We go.
Just don't call him Coach.
Okay, right. Yes, that's right.
Call me whatever I want.
So, and we're going to get to know you better this year because we're going to have the Chris Woodward Show. Do you feel like this is almost an audition for us to make sure we can handle the pressure?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, better be on top of your game, Mike. Well, I guess okay. You did this last year.
I did
so
get to do this
you're
last
fine.
Year. One of the fun things right now in spring training, Woody, is you're going to get to see some guys that you're working with that probably won't make the team to start the year, but will eventually be on the team at some point during the season. Are there some guys that are probably going to start off in, let's just say, double A right now, that you've been like, man, I've never really got to work with this guy, but he's really impressing me, and I could see at some point during the season or in his future that he's going to be a Texas Ranger?
Yeah, we actually have quite a few of them, and it's a testament to the minor league system right now that, you know, I'm seeing these guys that, you know, we asked our big league guys to put a ton of work in the offseason, and you see the minor league guys, you know, that were in A-ball last year, and, you know, the Leody Taveras and Anderson Tejeda, you see these guys come into camp, certain Apostle, they're ready to go. I mean, you know, from a swing standpoint, you know, I've seen the changes that, you know, they worked on all offseason, and now they're putting them in, you know, big league games. And, I mean, it's pretty impressive to watch. And, you know, the way they play the game, we got some kids that really enjoy playing it. And, you know, that's, I wouldn't say rare nowadays, but you get that that grit and that just love of the game. And all of, I feel like all of our younger players have that. And they're very open. They're listening. They're learning. They're growing. All the things that we kind of ask of our players. And we're seeing it on the field show up. And like I said, it's a joy to watch them because they love the game.
I need Apostle to make that play at third base from Monday, though, to get Allard out of that inning. I've been really big proponent of Allard. I was a little bit frustrated with just that one play. But I know you know exactly what I'm talking about.
No, yeah.
So speaking of Allard and the younger pitchers in general, I was hoping you could walk us through a couple of things. And I talked with Bassick about this yesterday, how y'all stretch out your starting pitchers in spring training. And then realistically, how many starting pitchers do you plan on thinking we're going to need this many for the whole season with injuries in the line?
I would say you at least have to have 8 or 9 quality. I mean at least.
Okay.
To probably get through a contending major league season. You know, if you're a lesser team, maybe not. You don't need as much. But, you know, if you're a contending team, you're going to need – at least 8 or 9, probably 10 quality arms to kind of fill those gaps. Starting pitching is so volatile. They, you know, guys miss time all the time. And, you know, luckily we have 5 quality guys. I fully expect one of them to have to miss some time at some point. So the Colby Allards, you know, the Joe Palumbos, those guys are going to have to fill in for us for sure.
Woody, I was talking to these guys earlier about a guy like Kyle Gibson who is on the mound versus a guy like Allard who was on the mound the other day. And I said, well, for the 5 guys that are under contract that are most likely going to be your 5 starters to start the year as long as they're healthy, they're getting prepared for the season. It's not so much of I got to really show the pitching coaches and maybe my skipper on what I can do or what I really did this offseason. I mean, they've been through this. They're doing it. So can you speak about when you're the manager and you're watching a guy like Corey Kluber, 2-time Cy Young winner, versus watching a guy like Taylor Hearn, who last year came up to the big leagues for a game and then got hurt and didn't get to pitch, the difference in what you're kind of looking for from from a veteran guy versus a guy that you know is working his butt off to impress to maybe make a team?
Yeah, and it's one thing that I stress to the entire pitching staff, and Julio's done a great job of this, and Doug Mathis, our bullpen coach. You know, yes, we know the guys that are for sure going to make the team. Like Jordan Lyles threw 18 out of 44 pitches yesterday, changeups, because he's working on it. It's something that he knows. He's not going to throw it at that high of a percentage during the season, but he's working on the feel, working on getting it. Montero threw a bunch of sliders the other day because he's working on that. I told our younger guys, listen, if there's something you're working on, Colby Allard, for example, working on his curveball spin, trying to reshape it, trying to do that, throw more of them. I don't care if you get hit. I know what you're working on. This isn't going to keep you from making a team. You know, yes, I know that you have a potential of giving up more runs, falling behind in counts because you're trying to throw certain pitches. You're trying to feel the shape of them. We need that to happen. We need Taylor Hearn to throw his changeup more. We need those things. And they have been doing that. They know for me that I'm telling them, I don't care what the results say. You need to prepare to pitch either, you know, if you happen to not make the team and you're in Triple A, you need to prepare to pitch in the major leagues. So if you think you're just going to go out there and get a zero ERA and that's going to be enough to make the team, but yet you haven't worked on your changeup and you think you're going to go out in a major league, you know, offense and throw two pitches and get them out, you know, that's the one thing I couldn't stress enough to our younger pitchers. Make sure you keep working on what you're working on. Get something out of spring training so when we hit the ground running in April that we're ready. Whether you're in the big leagues or whether you're not, you're still capable of pitching in the big leagues with the pitches you need.
I heard JD last week say that the length of the game isn't as important as the action in the game. And I started questioning the premium from the GMs and from the owners has been home runs. And that's become where you make your most money. Not batting 300, it's hitting home runs. That's how you get paid. And I wonder if there was a little more of a premium put back on being a base hitter creates more action because now you got guys on base all the time. And or has the game just gone too far in the philosophy of the home run means it has more value?
I think it has. So you see guys that hit 30 homers last year that had a hard time getting a job. Yeah, I mean, it's not about just the home run. It's about production. And one thing we instill in our offensive players from the top down, and this is all the way through the minor leagues as well now, is production. You know, the value of first base. You know, yes, clearly if you get a base hit, you're standing on first base. If you walk, you're standing on first base. If you hit a homer, you have to touch first before you hit second. So, you know, we're teaching them to understand the value of the strike zone, staying in the strike zone, to force pitchers, you know, and Bass could probably, you know, attest to this. When you pressure a pitcher to throw the ball over the plate and you don't give them ways out, and, you know, if they throw a ball just off, ball one, you know, down the middle, it's hit hard somewhere. You know, yes, maybe out of the ballpark is the best possible scenario, but at the same time, we're moving the ball forward with authority. Whether the ball goes out of the ballpark, I don't really care. I just know that if a guys are swinging at strikes in the middle of the strike zone and we're forcing pitchers to do that, we're going to be in good shape. Because we're going to get to first base a lot, whether that's via the homer, the double, triple, or a walk. And that's something that, you know, our offensive guys have really taken hold of. And, you know, we're working on it. You know, two-strike approach, we talked heavily the last 2 weeks about this. Great dialogue with our hitters. So the value of fouling off a two-strike pitch, you know, forcing Mike Bassick to throw you another strike.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's in the middle of the zone. Maybe it's taking away his strength. You know, Ruggie talked about this a lot. You know, the high fastball, being able to either foul it off or take it for a ball. Now we get ourselves in better counts and we continue the at-bats. And that's something that we really have been stressing.
I love this topic because I was talking to Jared Sandler about this and it was about Joey Gallo and Mike Trout. Mike Trout, nothing against Albert Pujols where he is in his career now, but he's not the same guy that he was in St. Louis. So I'm like, man, he has Anthony Rendon most likely every night hitting behind him. And right now, Joey Gallo, I'm just assuming fourth. You'll know your lineup, and it'll probably change here.
Although, if you want to tell us, yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Well, the first question, Joey Gallo, where do you feel like he's going to bat in your lineup?
I definitely want him in the top three.
Okay,
it could be fourth. I mean, okay. You know, depending on how, if you know, three guys in front of him are dominating, or at the end of the, you know, the back end of the lineup isn't as productive.
Yeah,
you know, maybe I will put more guys in front of him just to get more guys on base for him. But right now, I would say he'd probably be hitting third most of the time. Just based on the lineup.
So this is my question that I was discussing a theory with Sandler is how much does the guy batting behind you matter in your success? Because like, man, Mike Trout kind of, he has another top five hitter in the game now right behind him. So I wonder what Mike Trout's pitches he's going to get now that maybe he wasn't getting. And then if Joey Gallo gets off to the great start that he got off to last year, how important is it for the few guys batting behind him that Joey keeps seeing pitches to hit, because the team is like, man, I don't know. I don't want to just put Joey Gallo on because Todd Frazier's going right now or Rugi Odor's hot right now. So how important is the guy behind, maybe the guy you're building your lineup around?
Absolutely critical. And it's something we talk about constantly, you know, 1 through 9, just constant pressure. The amount of homers Joey hits is going to be determined by who hits behind him. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's just a fact. How many balls in the middle of the strike zone Joey Gallo gets is going to be dependent on who hits behind him, because teams know he's our biggest threat to hit the ball at the ballpark. So they'd be much more willing to just say, okay, you can go to first base and we'll deal with the next guy. If the next guy is actually doing really well and he's controlling the strike zone and doing damage in the strike zone, they're going to be forced to pitch to him. Same as Trout. You know, Trout can hit 40 homers out of 80 pitches. He's that good. He's like, a little bit Barry Bonds-ish, but, you know, Barry never got pitched at all, and he just got the one pitch every week, and he hit it out for somehow.
Mike threw that pitch to him once.
I know.
A couple times. but that's where it's really, really important for Joey and certain guys that are really doing well to understand that. To understand, okay, you know what? I may not even hit a homer these next 2 weeks. I may not get a pitch to hit a home run on the next 2 weeks, but I'm going to be patient. I'm going to wait for my pitch, even though I'm not getting it, because I have to trust the guy behind me is going to eventually get pitches back to me because he's going to do so well behind me. And that's where we can't have a lapse in our lineup. We can't have a guy go rogue and say, no, I'm going to do whatever I want. Like, we have to stay stubborn in this process. And you smother a pitcher, you suffocate a pitcher if that's the process. But if you got one guy who's not doing it, it's that you as a pitcher know, I get to that guy, I can stop all this.
Can you talk to us some about Willie Calhoun, especially from a physical, mental, and on-field perspective? Because last year, you know, he was very upfront about, you know, he was hoping to make the team. And I know when he didn't make it straight away, that there were some issues that came along with that. As opposed to you move forward a year and he is firmly entrenched as, like, all the fans think he's part of the team's future. I mean, I'm guessing he's part of the team's future. What kind of differences have you seen just from this time last year to right now with him?
His last 2 years, I would say, since I met him in 17, you know, it's a drastic turn. It's pretty much a 180 in his life and just everything, not just in his work ethic, his off the field, his on the field, just his perspective, his mental capacity, his growth. I mean, it's been awesome to watch, and it honestly is the entire organization working to help a player. You know, we've hit him from every aspect, and he's been open to that. You know, he's a much more mature kid. He's, like I said, he sees the world in a different way now.
How important is that part specifically?
It's huge. It's everything that I preach. I mean, it's like, we're not only trying to make guys great on the field, like, If you can change their perspective and turn them into better men, like, they're going to be better players. And what he values now is right. What he values, and there's a truth to that. There's a foundation to who he is. He can sustain, you know, failure, or he can withstand failure, and he can also withstand the biggest pressure, which, you know, high expectations, which we hope that all of these guys get to that level. We want these guys to want that, like, to be great. This guy just wants to win. He wants to be great himself, and he's willing. He understands the work that it takes, the dedication that it takes on a day-by-day basis to achieve that. And I know he, you know, through struggles now, he actually communicates. He talks about it. He's a problem solver. He's in a really, really good place.
Go ahead.
Not specifically just for Willie, but players in general. Is it problematic sometimes to see the day-by-day routine as opposed to the bigger picture? Like, I didn't make the opening day roster. What is that going to mean for this? Is that a difficult thing that you run into with young players?
Yeah, and it's something that I told Willie last year when we sent him down. You know, I made sure that I told him our relationship doesn't change based on me sending you down, or my opinion of you doesn't change because I've sent you down. You know, nothing changes between us. Now, you may not like me for a little while, but – you know, there's still that relationship. I still love you. I still support you to no end. But he understands now what had to happen, I guess, and the circumstances that we were kind of facing as a team at the time. And now he knows, like, he's part of this thing. That the organization cares about him, and that the organization cared about him even when they sent him down. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a big one for him to kind of wrap his head around because he didn't understand it at the time.
Sure.
I remember you saying last year, you know, he's done it for a couple months. He's gotten to that point, but you got to do that all the time to be a championship guy, yes. To be one of those kind of guys. And it's good to see that he's gotten to that point. We got Chris Woodward here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. One of the things we talked about yesterday, because the Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo audio while they were mic'd up was great because they were you got their personalities. He really did. And we were talking with Joey earlier. He's a star in interviews. Like, he absolutely is relatable. Everybody loves him. And I wonder if you would like to see some of that more during the regular season, where player, or is that a distraction in your eyes during the middle of a game when a guy's mic'd up?
No, I don't mind it. I think it's cool for the fans to honestly see, because we've seen Joey grow the last 2 years as well. You know, who he is and who I got to talk to the first time. You know, I wouldn't say different. The guy was in there, but now he's kind of freed up. You can see he's in a much better place mentally. Like I said, he's got more truth to what's going on. He knows how to handle failure. He knows what he's doing, knows what to work on. So he's much more at peace, you know, in his off the field time. And it's, you know, I think fans, it's cool for the fans to see that and to see the human side of him, because he is very relatable. You know, he deals with the same issues everybody deals with. He's, you know, Superman, uh-huh. You know, but when he takes his uniform off, he's a normal human being.
Yeah.
We see what he does on the field, and we almost, you know, put him at this upper level of human that nobody can touch. And then you start to talk to him, you realize this is a normal dude that, you know, is, you know, highly blessed in his physical capabilities, but
yeah.
He deals with the same issues we all deal with, and that makes him very, very relatable, and it's endearing to people.
I think that can help. I really think that can help the sport a lot whenever you start to get to know these players a lot better. As kids, you're sitting there going, okay, that guy's wearing a jersey, but then you hear him talk, and you're like, oh, wow.
Why isn't Mike Trout the biggest name in the world?
Yeah.
He's so freaking good, and people are like, yeah, no, I know him, but he's not on the level of so many other athletes.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I wanted to know this, Woody. 15, 20 years ago when we were playing, during batting practice, we worked a lot on hit and run, and we worked a lot on runner on second, hit behind the runner to get him to third with less than two outs. I was wondering, in today's game, because there aren't as many hit and runs as there were, let's say, 15 years ago in the game of baseball, how much here in spring training and during batting practice during the season are you guys still working on, hey, hit and run here. Hey, runner on second, nobody out, hit behind the runner. Or is that kind of, look, we're not trying to possibly give outs here, so let's not work on possibly giving yourself up that way?
I could definitely talk about the hit and run philosophy for a while.
Okay.
It is different nowadays. The hit and behind a runner, absolutely we do that. You know, runner on second, nobody out, there's still a place in that in any game. You know, get that guy to third base with one out, now the next guy can hit a fly ball. You know, infield's drawn in. There's a ton of reasons why you'd want to do that. You know, the hit and run, with the shift nowadays, when you're hitting right-handed, second base is standing right up the middle. That was the whole point of the hit and run back in the day, was to get that guy out of position. He's already out of position. So what's the point? And this is my, I guess, take on it. Some guys like hit and running. Elvis likes to hit and run. He likes, because he's really good with his bat to ball. If a guy is not good with the bat to ball, you saw us last year, we led the league in stolen bases. I let our guys choose. You know, we do the homework. We know exactly what your move is. We know how we can steal second base off you. So we're always constantly looking to take advantage of it. If you go 1-5 one time on us, we're gone. So the steal, obviously, in today's game has been suppressed. We said, no, we're gonna obviously push the envelope. So we do play small ball according to today's standards. But the hit and run itself, if a guy doesn't love to do it, I would rather a guy honestly put it on himself. So he is in charge almost to say, okay, I feel comfortable with this pitch. You know, as a manager, I don't want to put my footprint on the game just to put my footprint on the game, if that makes sense. I'm not going to force the issue just to say I call it a hit and run right there. There's a lot of ego that goes into that with managers. They like to put their stamp on the game. I want our players to put their stamp on the game. So, yes, we are training all these things. We are training the strike zone. You know, we need to stay in the strike zone. That is the small ball of today's game. If you don't swing at balls, you pressure that guy. And if you pressure him at first base, you are pressuring him from both sides. There is no way out for a pitcher. You know, that's what I want the pitcher to feel like. I have to hold the runner. I got to be careful because they're going to steal off me. And then when I throw the ball to home plate, I better make a quality pitch, or they're going to hammer it or take it for a ball, and I'm going to be behind in the count. So that, to me, is more you know, stressful than the actual hitting run. You know, if I call a hit and run, all a second baseman is move two steps in to cover second base. He's not vacating a position anymore, if that makes sense.
I always thought as a pitcher when I went to the National League, what I disliked and I never understood is they made me fake bunt and just chop the ball into the ground for half of my swings. And I'm not saying that if we do that, we're actually going to be good hitters. If we end up not doing that and practice on our swing, I was like, why are we practicing something that's rarely going to come up and you're wanting me to make a bad swing at the ball? And I know that's from a pitcher standpoint, but I always thought that when I was with the Nationals and the Mets, why are we practicing a bad swing when I could be trying to practice a better swing? Because there's going to be more situations where I actually have to try to put the ball in play hard and find a hole rather than fake bunt and just chop it down on the ground as hard as I can.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's, you know, that's why it's kind of, you know, some of the stuff, you know, if you watch our guys train in the cages, you know, we're training at a much higher level, at a much more difficult level. And that was something that I was very, very passionate about when I came here. You know, I'd never understood why we take the 60-mile-an-hour BP, 100% strikes down the middle. And if you take a little bit off, our hitters get upset. They're like, ugh. You know, if you throw a ball just off the plate or just on the corner, it's like, oh, man, this guy's cutting it on me. This guy's, what do you think is going to happen in the game? Over 50% of pitches in the game are balls. Mm-hmm. And yet we're not training our guys to understand that and to be able to take a ball.
Identify and, the right ones.
Yeah, so our training in the cages is all dedicated to that. I mean, we got all kinds of different ways to do that. You know, very, very high spin, high velo, you know, hard sliders. You know, we can manipulate the machine to make it ball, strike. So we're really challenging our guys from a mental standpoint to do what they're going to have to be asked to do in the game. And it's showing up. Yeah. You start to see the strike zone recognition on the good takes. We value a take just as much as we do an ace swing.
I remember there was a cage in Cleveland when I was at Winter Haven, Florida, was where we trained. And I remember Dave Roberts was working on bunting, but also the ball was yellow and it had different numbers and different colors on it. Yeah. And so he had to identify what the color was and the number was to really work his eyes. Is that still something?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And this is something that, it would take me 2 hours to go through all the things that we do in there. But we have a wiffle ball machine that, you know, comes in hot, throws curveballs, throws breaking balls, throws, you know, high fastballs, and these guys are tracking them. Some of them are half-colored, some of them are yellow, white, green, red, and they're, you know, they have to either hit it or catch it, only if it's certain colors, you know, only if it's half a certain color, and it's, you know, we're really stepping up the game, and that's something, like I said, that I was really passionate about, because as hitters, we just were kind of thrown out in the ocean and said sink or swim. Now we're actually teaching them how to swim, if that makes sense, to handle the difficulty that they have to face in the game. Because the guys now, I mean, they're not only throwing harder, but they're a little bit predictable at times. If guys have good breaking balls or guys have good velo or spin on their fastball, they're using it to match their characteristics. So we know that. So Ruggie now trains, you know, his mindset is totally different now on high spin fastballs. He knows, okay, I got to hit a line drive to the shortstop. I can't elevate this ball. I have to stay above this ball. Otherwise, I'm gonna miss it. And, you know, you started to see that progress at the end of last year. And now you see it this year. Like I said, what we're doing in there, I'm really pleased with the uncomfortableness of how we train. And they're okay with that. They're all buying into that. And they see it when they get on the field, how much easier the game has become now because of that.
Real quick, as investigative reporters yesterday, we wandered down to the dugout and saw three giant trash cans. Is that just for trash, or is that a competitive advantage right there?
I'm pretty sure it's just. I think we got landfill, we got recycling, and trash. So no use of banging on
that's
it.
That's a smart answer. That's a very smart answer for you to give. Well, we appreciate it so much, and hopefully we've passed our first spring training test to get ready
for the
Chris Woodward Show this year.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you so much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.